Hello, this is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Baltimore on Q1370 WQLL. Catholic Baltimore is a weekly radio program hosted by the Archdiocese of Baltimore, airing each Sunday following the broadcast of the Radio Mass of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic radio partners for sharing with us some of the contents in this program and for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to the Archdiocese of Baltimore every Sunday.
I'm Sean Kane, and you're listening to Catholic Baltimore. We continue with our discussion of area Catholic schools, as today we discuss one of the most successful and prominent schools in Baltimore, Loyola Blakefield. Joining us today to discuss Loyola are the principal of the upper school, Mr. John Marinacci, and the school's director of admissions, Mr. John Feely. John and John, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So if there's anyone on the planet who's listening to this who doesn't know what and where Loyola Blakefield is, could one of you just give a thumbnail sketch of the school and its history and background?
Sure, easy. It is an all-boys school, grades 6 through 12. It's a college preparatory school. We're located in Towson, Maryland, where we've been for about 80 years. We were founded in 1852, so that makes us one of the oldest schools in the area. We have an enormous alumni presence and are pretty well recognized in the community for academic rigor and our forms of scholarship.
So for anyone familiar with the area, if you're driving up North Charles Street, it's
a castle on the hill.
Exactly. Yeah. So just to give it some context. Integral to the history and identity of the school is its Jesuit roots and mission. So give us a sense of the connectedness and the importance of that Jesuit identity.
The Jesuit identity is huge. It's not something that's just kind of a leftover from the days where we were predominantly clergy. We're very intentional about our Ignatian identity. If you were to come on campus today, for example, part of every day we take about 5-10 minutes to do what's called the examine, which is taken directly from the spiritual exercises of St. Ignatius.
Right.
Yeah. And all our teachers are trained in an Ignatian education training, and our lessons are based off of the IPP, the Ignatian Pedagogical Paradigm, which is directly based off of the model of the spiritual exercises as well, incorporating reflection, action, context. And that's something that lives very much so. So, for example, it's very practical. You'll see a student not just writing a paper, but actually taking part in exercises that's reflecting on the exercise of writing and then to inform what their next steps are going to be in the future as a writer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very much alive on our campus.
So as a parent, if I'm listening to this and wondering what makes that different from your traditional Catholic education, is there a way to describe it in a way that people can understand?
Certainly. I would say Ignatian educators are all about pointing everything towards the transformation of a young person, in this case a young man, through the ideals of context, reflection, action, and then service. So everything we do is, education is the tool, not the outcome. Everything we do is geared towards the transformation of the young man. We prepare him for heaven, not Harvard. That's the idea. And Harvard is great, and we get him to Harvard. But the idea here is that we're trying to make sure that everything we're working towards is not just a matter of saying, and be a good person, too. It's to round out a whole human being. The idea of the Jesuits, of course, is that God is present in all things. So reading a great work of literature, struggling with math problem, writing poetry, working computer science, those are all ways to come closer with your spiritual existence and God in the eyes of Ignatian educator.
You mentioned in the open the large alumni presence in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. That's also something that struck me that those who attended Loyola continue to be connected to the school, and more than just for the years soon after they've graduated. So to what do you attribute that kind of lifelong connection?
Well, it's funny. The Jesuit Volunteer Corps has an unofficial motto that says "ruined for life." I am a product of Jesuit education in New York. I'll give a plug to Fordham Prep, my high school. But it's almost like when you get involved with Jesuit education, you get brought into this. I don't want to say elite club because it makes it sound like we don't let people in, but you get initiated into this society, for lack of a better word, that sees things a little differently. And then you attach it to a great school like Loyola, where you have a great sense of place, a great sense of being, and a great sense of community. Our alums are pretty much ruined for life. And it's connected to the place, to the identity, to the people that are there, and to the way they go on proceeding after they're done with us. They're never done with Loyola, because it informs what they do in college, academically certainly, but more importantly, their morality, their way of proceeding, their choices that they make, and then in their professional lives. It's amazing how many working alums locally and beyond continue to do service. Places like Baltimore Station, they get together, they do things, and it's all a direct reflection on the influence that Loyola has had in their lives.
So for prospective families, got a child who's going to be entering middle school or high school in the next few years, can you give an overview of what the Loyola experience is like, in academics to fine arts to athletics and mm-hmm. facilities, anything else?
Academics, second to none. Well-rounded education, grounded in the classics. The facilities, come on out and see. We have a beautiful campus, state-of-the-art in a lot of ways. The really things that I would like to push, because there's a lot of beautiful schools out there, what I would encourage families to look at is things like our retreat program. We have an intentional retreat program on every level from grade 6 through 12, culminating with a Kairos retreat, which is something that's very, very informative and powerful for our juniors and seniors. These things foster not just spiritual growth, but kinship, leadership, and it's something that very much differentiates us from other schools. I would encourage schools to look at our Ignatian service programs. It's not just about going out and serving. We're geared towards social justice. So it's something that, yes, do we believe in charity? We certainly do. We do charity work, but we also believe in action. So we believe in making sure we're addressing problems, ideas at the roots and the political levels that we need to as well. We're trying to inform our students and how to mobilize on those issues as well, so that by the time they're walking out, they have an incredibly solid academic background, but they're also prepared to take on the real world issues that need addressing to make the world a better place.
And I think one of the things that, as I talk to young alums, kids coming back from college and visiting us, one of the most interesting things they always, almost universally say is when they get to that college experience, and it's some Ivies and Jesuit schools around the country, some of the top schools, they say college is easy, because of the preparation work that occurred for me here, this foundational work, not just, as John said, rooted in the classics, but the idea that you think for yourself, you advocate for yourself within a school system, that you are about learning, not just getting the grades. So when they go off to these college experiences and they're nervous to compete among the best and the best in the country, they come back saying, that's easy. For whatever you did for me worked out so well that I'm thriving.
What are parents and students looking for? They're shopping for high schools. Is there one thing that you would say, somebody comes to Loyola, they're expecting X, or maybe they're not expecting it, and then when they find out you have it, they're like, oh, well, this is the place for me.
I would say so many people are looking for so many different things,
right?
Mm-hmm. And you can't be everything to everyone, or else you become nothing to anybody. Right. I mean, that's the end of the day. But I would say the thing that people are so surprised about here is the level of care and compassion mm-hmm. that certainly the teachers show for their students, but you expect that in any sound educational environment. But the students show mm-hmm. for the students, and the students show for the adults of the community. This is my first year as principal. I just completed my first year. I had a group of seniors who I went on a retreat with that they came in and checked on me on a regular basis to see how I was doing. That's not something that's typical of a 16 or 17-year-old boy mm-hmm. To have that kind of empathy and care. But it's on display all the time here. And I think that is really the thing. I mean, we have cyber programs that are internationally recognized, forensics, athletics. People know those things because they make headlines. But when you come in and look for those things, what you find in addition to those is so remarkable that I think that's the thing that catches people off guard. And they want to say, I can't put my finger on it, but how do I get my son to become that way? Mm-hmm. And the answer is, come to Loyola.
Send them back to us.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so many of them do, which is a great thing. If I were to speak to a Loyola student who graduated in May or June, whenever your graduation was, what do you think he would be likely to say about his experience? So this is pre-college, hasn't gotten to a point yet where he's going to say, you prepared me well, although he may still feel that way. That won't dawn on him until he gets, you know, midway through his freshman year probably. Yeah.
I think we've hit on a couple of those things already. I think what they would say is, first of all, they don't want to go.
Yeah.
They want to stay behind. Yeah. It's such a wonderful transformative experience to them that they've had that epiphanous moment already. They know they've already been transformed. The other thing that I think that in having taught there and attended the school myself and now work as administrator, I've recognized is, as John alluded to earlier, they recognize that it's they have the capacity to love others, that filial love for their fellow student. All of them, not just the guys who they're closest to or are much alike, but everybody in their midst. And then what that allows for them to feel in return is love. They're accepting of love and affirmation and affection. And as John said, 16, 17-year-olds, that's highly unusual. And it's that immersed atmosphere that they find themselves in that allows for them to be that open. And then, obviously, they take that to college with them and beyond. And so when you referred earlier to why the alumni seem so close, tight-knit in this community, that's a lot of it, that idea that I can feel strongly for other people, and I'm welcome to feel that in return.
Last night I was out at a local pizza place, and I ran into a senior who just graduated, and he's working at a retail store, and he's working checkout, and he's going to be going to Towson next year. And I said, Tommy, how you doing? And he said, good. I said, you shut down completely? And he said, I want to, but I can't. Mm-hmm. And I said, why? And he said, I don't know. You guys trained me so well to constantly be thinking about stuff that I just, he's like, I just sit there all day and I just think of replay my 4 years in my head. And, you know, it wasn't nostalgic already. Yeah. It was just his inability to, you can't walk away.
Yeah.
Then that's what it comes down to.
You lit the spark.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So he's still working. The gears are still turning.
That's great.
I'm happy
to
see that.
You've done your jobs then. So how can people learn more about Loyola Blakefield?
Yep. The best way to do it is, one is obviously our website, www.loyola.org.
LoyolaBlakefield.org.
Loyola. Thank you, John. LoyolaBlakefield.org. If students are interested in becoming students at Loyola, we have a shadow day process. That shadow day registration opens in mid-August, so they can go to the visit tab of our website. They can come for a shadow day and experience that. During the summer, we offer tours of the campus, so they only need to contact the admissions office, me in particular, and we can certainly set that up.
And your open house?
Our open house is Sunday, October the 18th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Wonderful time to see the school.
So tons of opportunities to visit and to check it out. Visit the website, and we thank you both for being here with us today to learn more about Loyola Blakefield.
Thank you for having us.
I appreciate it.
Catholic news from the Archdiocese of Baltimore and around the world with the Catholic Review. The Catholic community in the Archdiocese of Baltimore recently lost three important leaders. Agnes Kane Colum, a noted genealogist and historian who chronicled the history of African-American Catholics, died July 22nd. A longtime columnist for the Catholic Review, Colum researched topics such as the history of her home parish of St. Francis Xavier in East Baltimore. She also examined colonial Maryland and the experience of people such as Father Charles Randolph Uncles, the first African-American seminarian to be educated and ordained a priest in the United States. Colum's funeral mass was offered at St. Francis Xavier. Sister Marie Charles Grauer, a legendary figure at the Institute of Notre Dame, who served as an English teacher for more than three decades at the East Baltimore High School, died July 20th. The school sister of Notre Dame quietly saved money to help pay the tuition of students whose families couldn't afford it. She also visited local businesses to place hundreds of students in after-school jobs to help them with tuition. Sister Marie Charles' funeral mass was offered at Villa Assumpta in Baltimore. Finally, prominent post-Vatican II architect William L. Goudreau died July 6th. Known for his modernist style that sought to encourage more participation at Mass, Goudreau designed numerous churches in the Archdiocese, including Our Lady of Hope in Dundalk, St. Matthew in Northwood, St. John the Evangelist in Severna Park, St. Joseph in Midland, and what is now St. Gabriel in Woodlawn. He also completed work for several Catholic schools, including St. Francis Academy in East Baltimore and Calvert Hall in Towson. Goudreau's funeral mass was offered July 11th at St. Mary's Seminary in Roland Park, where he had also designed buildings. For the latest Catholic obituaries, visit CatholicReview.org, click on the Life tab, and scroll down to obituaries. From the newsroom of the Catholic Review, this is George Matisek.
Do you want to know more about what's going on in the church and the world than you can get from your daily newspaper or local TV? Read the only newspaper in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the church full-time, the Catholic Review. The print newspaper can be delivered to your home every other Thursday, and you can get fresh news every day online at CatholicReview.org. Subscribe to the Catholic Review e-newsletter for twice-a-week updates. Find our app on Apple and Android, and follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Pinterest. Wherever your faith takes you, Catholic Review Media is ready to inspire, teach, inform, and engage. Read it today, in print and online, at CatholicReview.org. Again, online, that's CatholicReview.org.
Life can be hard, and at times we feel overwhelmed and alone. When faced with problems, know that there is a group of Catholics who are part of the prayer ministry of the Archdiocese of Baltimore, waiting to lift you and your needs to God in prayer. This ministry is comprised of men and women, young and old, religious and lay, from every ethnic and cultural background. They pray as individuals and in groups, in homes and meeting spaces throughout Baltimore. Like you, they are people who have suffered the same hurts, fears, pains, sickness, loss, and everyday burdens. Learn more about this ministry by visiting our website at www.archbalt.org. If you are in need of prayer, send your prayer request to prayers@archbalt.org or by phone to 410-547-5517. Would you like to volunteer to be a part of the ministry? Prayer ministers are always needed. Please call or email our coordinator, who would be happy to speak with you.
Catholic Baltimore takes a look at the men who have led the Premier See of Baltimore since its inception in 1789. With the help of Father Michael Roach, church historian and professor of church history at Mount St. Mary Seminary, we are offered a glimpse into the challenges and achievements, the education and background, and the leadership qualities of those men who have served as Archbishop of Baltimore. This is Sean Kane. You're listening to Catholic Baltimore. Father Roach, thanks for being with us.
Wonderful to be here.
What do we know about the successor of Ambrose Marischal, Archbishop James Whitfield?
James Whitfield, an Englishman. He was influenced in his vocation by Marischal, so it's very fitting that he would succeed him. Whitfield had tried out his vocation as a Jesuit for a while, but didn't perjure. And then he runs into Ambrose Marischal on the continent. He's very taken with him. He becomes a great influence and influences him so much he goes back into the seminary, and he's ordained for Baltimore, where Marischal is teaching. He's the right-hand man of Marischal. He goes to school at St. Mary's and gets his doctorate, one of the first three doctorates given by an American seminary. Scholarly man. he was a merchant in Liverpool, I believe, before entering religion, and he kept that brilliance in the mercantile field. He was a good money raiser, if you will, and he bought the Archbishop's house. That's why it's not the old cathedral's rectory. It's the Archbishop's house, because he paid for it himself. That was out of his own pocket. So 408 North Charles Street always belongs to the person of the Archbishop of Baltimore, and that's because of Whitfield's generosity. He was also pretty enlightened racially. He encouraged the Oblate Sisters of Providence, which was the first order of African-American sisters in the world, probably, and he saw the possibility for their evangelizing and serving the black community. He was a rather enlightened man. He was a very fine man, I think. One of the underrated archbishops of Baltimore.
So that's a pretty progressive stance for that era to understand that African Americans, people of color, then needed some specific intentional ministry.
Right, right. It was also probably because he wasn't an American. He had a different cultural background to look at this question.
And he reportedly served as rector of the cathedral?
He was indeed rector of the cathedral.
Vicar General?
Vicar General. I mean, this man wore all the hats. He was an omnicompetent kind of man. And yet not self-centered, it seems. Seems he was a very giving kind of man.
Mm-hmm. Seems like great experience, educational background, and disposition to wear the hat, if you will.
If you will.
Yeah. So do we know he would be the first to convene the first two provincial councils of Baltimore? What did those councils look at, and do we know what emerged from them?
Interestingly, John England had been pushing Ambrose Marischal to call a council, and Marischal resisted him completely. But once Marischal left the scene, Whitfield was more open to it. And a lot of these things are administrative details, where the income from the parishes would go, what were the liturgical regulations of the metropolitan province, what particular sermons were to be given in what particular season. A call to accountability from the pastors and from the parishes.
So would these provincial councils, would they have been attended by pastors or bishops from other dioceses?
Usually the bishop and his vicar general and perhaps one other priest.
So these would have been from how many dioceses at that time would there have been?
Well, from the south would do Charleston, Richmond, Baltimore, Philadelphia, New York, Boston, Bardstown in the west.
Great. So handful of dioceses. Were they all seeing the same things, facing the same challenges, or had the country begin to diversify and populate enough that we were starting to see different challenges in different areas of the country?
Well, interestingly enough, early on, Catholicism was a rural phenomenon. The largest parish in the new nation was at Conowago up in McSherrystown, Hanover, Pennsylvania. But we're seeing a gradual urbanization of the church at this time, especially with the increasing immigration from Germany and Ireland.
And did that that influx of immigrants, did that help to shape Whitfield's role in the kinds of things he would focus on?
I think he was a man who was very aware of his surroundings and very aware of the needs of the day. So he was alert and would try to respond to what were perhaps new challenges in his archdiocese and metropolitan province.
Was he a man of means? It seems if he had the ability to purchase the things that he did in terms of the not only the residence, but he's said to have purchased the two towers at the cathedral as well as
St.
James Church.
Right, he put them on, yeah. That's named after his own patron. Yes, he was a man of personal affluence. He had that before he came to the ministry.
Then do we know how he came to have that personal wealth? Was that family wealth? Was it?
Yes, I think it was mainly family wealth. I won't say it was the usual sources of the great American fortunes, and that's whores, rum, and slaves.
Thank God.
Right. His was honestly won.
Well, you said Archbishop Whitfield will probably be remembered as or should be remembered as one of the great archbishops, his primary responsibility was the diocese itself. But as the nation grew and new dioceses sprung forth, his responsibilities grew. And did he seem well equipped to deal with the expanding responsibilities of a metropolitan archbishop?
Yeah, he was a first-class administrator, as a matter of fact, and not so concerned with his own prerogatives. He was a selfless man.
And would that be something that would carry over to his successor, or was that something that that others might try to emulate in terms of that humility and that? It seems that some of the archbishops were concerned with the reputation and place of the archdiocese more than he was.
Right. He was not a careerist. He was not self-seeking.
Right. That's the fourth Archbishop of Baltimore, James Whitfield, successor to Ambrose Marischal.
Are you interested in joining the Archdiocese of Baltimore and Catholic Review Media on a bus pilgrimage to the Papal Mass in Philadelphia, September 27th? Pope Francis is expected to celebrate an outdoor mass along Philadelphia's famed Benjamin Franklin Parkway. It will be a huge crowd and a great way to celebrate our faith together with hundreds of thousands of fellow Catholics, even if the Pope is just a tiny dot from your vantage point, or you can only see him on a video screen. You will want to join what will probably be the largest gathering of Catholics in the USA this year.
For more information about the September 27th pilgrimage to the Papal Mass, visit tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus. That's tinyurl.com/CR-Philly Bus or call 443-524-3150. 443-524-3150. See you in Philly.
For 143 years, New Cathedral Cemetery has served the needs of the Catholic community of Baltimore and Central Maryland. New Cathedral is the only cemetery owned by the Archdiocese of Baltimore and is the final resting place for many religious orders and famous citizens. 125 acres of rolling hills, trees, and beautiful monuments, the cemetery is an oasis of peace and tranquility and is located off Edmondson Avenue just outside of Catonsville. New Cathedral is dedicated to the task of tending to the mortal remains of our dearly departed and has many more years of available space. If you are in need of a burial site, vault, monument, or marker, or just a respectful location to place your cremated loved ones, our counselors will help you through this process and make sure the wishes of you and your loved ones are honored. Visit us online at newcathedralcemetery.org, like us on Facebook at New Cathedral Cemetery Bonnie Bray, or call 410-566-7770.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Baltimore. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners, now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May God bless us and keep us always in his love.